Launching a startup company from nothing definitely isn't for everybody. Going from having a great idea to having a successful business is a long, difficult, and complicated journey. Tough times are all but guaranteed to happen at some point. So why even bother? To have the freedom to be your own boss of a company that you are wildly passionate and proud of. The amount of times I've heard a founder say that they left a great paying, secure job to go off on their own and start something completely from scratch is truly inspiring. But like the saying goes, it does take a village to raise a child. Meaning that unless you're a superhuman, you can't build a successful company all on your own. Somewhere along the line, you'll need help in the form of hiring good employees, finding a mentor, and having a family that supports your endeavors. On this episode of the Fry Team podcast, JP, founder of OPN, a fund that invests in early stage companies, joins me again to discuss becoming a successful entrepreneur in the startup space. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome back, JP, to the Fry Investment Team podcast.
Brendan, thanks for having me. Super excited to kick off round two.
And for anybody who's starting on round two, I highly recommend going to round one because JP just gave loads of value, loads of information, easy to digest for those who are the layman because this space is it's a unique one. So, you know, JP, I really, really appreciate you kind of cutting it down for the layman, more or less like myself, because I'm still pretty new in this space here. You're a vet in this space. Again, anybody that is starting on round two, go back to the first one. It's fantastic. For this episode, we're going to be chatting about angel investment, but from the entrepreneurial side. But if you wouldn't mind, again, JP, if you could give us brief background about yourself, OPN, supporters fund, that would be great.
Perfect. You bet. And again, thank you very much for having me. I'm always excited to be working, listening to the podcast. And Brendan, you're doing a great job. So thank you for having me. So to start off, my background is ex-software engineer, worked for the largest retailer, which is in Canada, which is Loblaws, 20 some plus years ago. And during my tenure there, I got to do a lot of great things. And one of them was that I spent a lot of time operating in the e-commerce space. And while doing that, I got interested and introduced to a lot of early stage companies. And the reason why this was really exciting is because I really did find a real connection to these companies. And this is what got me started working with early stage businesses. I would help them re-engineer their models and then get them in front of executives and sell them through to solve problems within the larger entity of Loblaws. And carrying that through, continued to work with early stage companies. After I left Loblaws, I went to a startup and then I started my own company, first company, which is a resourcing company. And we do resourcing for big pharma, bank and health tech with offices in Pakistan, Philippines, Toronto and Egypt. And we do those through the resourcing of tech resourcing. So while doing that, we continued to work with early stage companies. It was like an addiction, always liked working with them, understanding the problems they were solving and finding out ways to help them grow, and then started to invest in these companies. And as we did this, those companies started coming back to us asking that they could get in front of more investors and how we could help them. And we kept hearing this. Interestingly enough, we decided, why don't we create our own venture firm? And that's where the Open People Network started. So 6-7 years ago, we created Open People Network. And what that is it's almost, for us, it's our lead gen. It brings us all the deal flow around the world. So today we see about 300 companies monthly, and we work with those companies at the best capacity we can by offering them growth partners, venture partners, and we run a program called ETE where you can submit a video where it's a 2-minute video of your business and the problems you're trying to solve. And then we put that together, take the best 20 to 40 companies from that, and then we put it out to our network. We run the event. And we take a couple of those companies out of that mold and we start to work with those companies and we make an investment into them. Typically 90% of the time we're first money in and that investment comes from the supporters fund. So today we're on our third fund and we're raising 50 million and we're going to utilize those dollars to continue to invest in early stage companies. And as mentioned prior, 90% of the time we're first money in and we tend to invest in deep tech, fintech and CPG companies. And from that, we've also created an offshoot, which is a podcast where we interview angels and VCs, again, to help early stage companies get access to investors and to learn what they're looking for. And then we'll make direct intros if the founders see that as a good fit for them, because we're always happy to help build out the community within the community that we've built, but also to spread this around the world so that we can help as many founders as we can build their companies and do them in a more scalable fashion and getting in front of the right people. So that kind of gives you an overview of what the Open People Network is and how the Supporters Fund jumps in with investments. And that's us and how we started and where we're at today.
You did bring up the E2E events and being a part of those for the last year, year and a half, 2 years. It's been quite a few that I've been to. It's a great showcase for entrepreneurs globally. And, you know, it makes our world, I'm not sure exactly where you work from day to day, but I'm in my home office and it's nice. It makes the world feel just so much. It shows that everybody around the world is trying to make the world a better place, or there are a lot of people trying to make the world a better place, whether you're from Canada or Gambia or Ghana or Israel. It's really amazing to see that there are a lot of like-minded people out there. And in the same vein, you have all of that support that if you have a question, you know, you can ask somebody from halfway around the world. This isn't 40, 50 years ago where you had your couple of friends around you that would either cheer you on or poo-poo your idea. So it's really nice that there's this global community and in part aided by you with what you're doing with the Supporters Fund and OPN. Community seems to be everything for entrepreneurs, especially a new entrepreneur in the startup space.
Totally agree. It's awesome. And I love the way that you preface that by being part of the community and joining in and helping support that and seeing that it is a small or a big world that we all fit in. But just that everybody is able to collaborate and solve problems together. And it's interesting. We've run lots of programs over the better part of 6 or 7 years. And ETE was the one that was the most fun and the one that always had the hair standing on your arms, because when you saw a company pitch from Ghana to Nigeria to Spain all the way into Canada and Toronto, Montreal, it just was so exciting because you were like, wow, this is so cool that you're solving this problem in your country and being able to be part of that and bring in all of our growth partners to be part of this. It makes it exciting and it does make the world seem a lot smaller, that we're a lot closer and that there's problems in everywhere in the world and that there's some really, really, really smart people that are tackling these problems and that we get the opportunity to interact with them on a daily basis. And using our ETE is a great way to streamline all of those great ideas into one spot, but also allowing us to find all these great innovation companies and build the potential to invest in them in the future. So it's been a really great program and we're excited and glad that we were able to find the one that had the most stickiness and the most excitement that we can share with the world, and we're pretty excited about it as well.
A common theme across most entrepreneurs, especially that I see on E2E or any other events that you put on, is the energy and the passion. That seems to be a common denominator, no matter what industry, no matter what country you're from. But with all passion and energy and excitement, there are really tough times that come along as well. For I'm not sure if there are any entrepreneurs out there that haven't gone through a tough time. So from your personal experience with, let's say, Hardboot, when times got really tough, what was it that kept you going through it?
Great question. The key to anything that you do is, one day you have a passion for survival, you have a passion for growth, you have a passion for your idea and how this idea is changing the world. And again, not every business is going to change the world, but every business is still a business that can generate revenue and solve people's problems. Not every business needs to be a venture-based business, meaning that every business doesn't have to raise funds. Every business that can grow, you've seen them, they're 1 million, 10 million, 20 million in revenue, they're profitable, they're generating value, they're building value for families. So out there is a lot of businesses. 98% of countries typically run off early stage companies, run off of home-run businesses. I think that there is a little bit of an idea that every company wants to be venture-backed, and maybe there is, but there are ones that are made to be venture-backed. And when you look at things that we've done at Hardboot, what drove us to overcome obstacles? We pivoted many times over the years. We hit many walls over the years. But the drive to survive and to build something that built value, built wealth, all of those things all still tie into your desire to make something work. Today, we all have this feeling that we're not good unless we got venture-backed, or we can't survive unless we bring in venture-backed capital. And I would disagree with that. I think that the world has to start to think about, if I want to scale and I want to build this company to be massive, then I'm going to go after venture capital, because that's what's going to help me scale my business. But if I want to build something that is 10, 5, 10 million in revenue, and that I'm going to be able to survive on and grow, that's also exciting and very, very great for the economy and great for the country. So there's different ways you have to look at your business. And when you are hitting a wall and you are going through these tough times, it just gives you an opportunity to restructure how you're running your business. How can I simplify what I'm doing? How can I take out these two things or add in this thing? And as a great entrepreneur, you're always looking at ways to blow up what you're doing to make it bigger, better, and stronger. And those come from those difficult times. When COVID hit, a lot of difficult times. You're always going to hit walls, and you have to be able to pivot quick or make changes. And a lot of that you may think comes from just yourself, but even more of it's going to come from the network you surround yourself with. The people, the mentors, the coaches, the people that you can talk to and vet your problems through, your team members, they're huge, because you have to ensure that their families are taken care of and they're also secure. So in this process, and when you hit walls or when you hit tough times, it's really all about communication. It always comes down to that. And it's about a belief in yourself and the direction that you want to go. And as an entrepreneur, you fix problems. How can you fix your own problems and keep your train running on the tracks ahead of you? Can you find ways to make sure that the track is laid miles ahead of you, so you're not always throwing the track down to keep the business running? But find the space that you fit in, and find the people that support you. Because along the way, as you build your company, you're going to lean on those people. You're going to lean on those mentors, those coaches. You're going to lean on your team members, your senior level team members. And as you continue to grow and build, and you help them understand where you're trying to go and you're building that strategy, when you do hit those walls, those are the people that are going to step up and support you and support the business. And that's what's going to help you work your way through those tough times. And if you start looking at your business, either a venture-based business or as self-funded, there's a lot of different options that you can utilize, from government all the way across, from angels and VCs to support you if you are going after equity-based investing, which is the venture capital side. And then there's also non-dilutive side, which can help support your company when you do go through tough times. But I think the number one thing to keep in mind is that during the build of your company, the biggest assets you have is how fast you can think, how fast you can access your network, which all comes down to communication, strong networking, and working with the people around you. And the people outside your network, they're going to help support you as you grow your business. But lean on people, share insights, share information, because those are the people that are going to share and help you along your way in good and in bad times.
So leaning on supports, using family, mentor, not using, but, you know, leaning on friends, family, mentors. Is there, I mean, in your past, I'm sure you've had a mentor or two. Is there any ideal or correct type of mentor to go after? And type meaning, like, can it be a friend who's also successful in business, or a business coach, or, you know, somebody that you reach out on there are plenty of networking sites out there where you're randomly paired with somebody who may share an interest or something that you're looking for. Is there a right type of mentor you would go after, or is it really, I don't want to say anybody that'll listen, but for lack of a better term, somebody that'll be there to kind of share their thoughts with you, whether it's a professional opinion or not, just to bounce ideas off of?
There certainly is. When I first started in big business, before I went into entrepreneurship, I did have mentors and coaches. And what I did is I looked for people that had a skill set that I lacked in, like I didn't have the strong ability in. And I wanted to learn more about that. So they became that vertical that I could go to learn more, share ideas on, and get their insights as being the professional or the expert in. So let's just take an example of a marketer. One of my, when I worked at Loblaws, one of my first mentors at Loblaws was the senior vice president of marketing. And I asked them, I said, look, I'm a tech guy, I'm a developer. I don't have the proficient skills that I need in marketing, and I would love it if you could be my mentor. And that to me was, his name was Paul Clark, a phenomenal, phenomenal guy. And I got a lot of learning from that because I was able to spend time every 2 weeks, every month, sitting down and then just sharing what we were doing and how we were doing it from a marketing, e-commerce, development standpoint, and took a lot of insight on approaches to the market, what things we could do, not do. And I learned a lot about how to operate inside of that, but also learned the business acumen and how to process and work with others in the space that we were in. So you can get a lot of mentorship and coaching from people that are like-minded, but you're really looking for people that are going to challenge you. You want a different perspective, somebody that isn't always going to tell you what you want to hear or align to where you're trying to go. You want them to push back against what you're used to. So in that case, we went after mentors that were really strong in a certain vertical. But then on the other side, my very first mentor that I was put with and paired with ended up becoming a very good best friend to me, which was Ben Alex. And he was a software engineer. And that's how I learned how to code better. That's where I learned how to do everything better, because him and I were just two tech innovators and I got to learn a lot from him. So on that mentorship side, you are looking for people that will support you. You're looking for people that will give you a different perspective. And then you're looking for outliers. So who are these people that can really support you, that maybe come into your network, that are very knowledgeable and offer these expertise in a different area that you wouldn't even think could provide you with that value? And that, to me, my next mentor that was really strategic for myself was Chris Chenoweth. And he was also a really strong proponent. He was a legal lawyer. And I ended up having a few others along the way as we moved into our fund side. Then it became another strategic player, I guess, if you will, in that same space. And you're always going to be looking for what can I do? Where can I learn, and who's going to help guide me along my journey? And I'm going to test them. I'm going to try everything to figure out where I can be better and sharper. And, you know, in our case, I ended up being able to be mentored by Alfred from Miller Thompson, Alfred Apps. And again, it was because he brought an element of early stage investing and legalities that we didn't have that experience in. And again, all of these come down to, in your journey, you're going to find people that are going to be drawn to you, that you're going to get some quick learning from. And then there's other people that are just going to stand out and be able to be more of that guidance in the big picture view. I was interviewing an investor the other day, and the great thing that came out of that interview was that he had said, his name's David Evans, and he had said, the big change for me was in 2015 when I learned to become a CEO. I've been a CEO in many companies, but I learned to become a CEO in 2015. And I was like, that's amazing. Well, what was the changeover? He became an operator, and he changed from being an operator to a big view, a big picture view. And that is when he became the CEO, which is where he stepped into the role of learning how to think big and how to drive teams. And all of these things come from that mentorship, the learning, the reading, and that pivotal point in time where you need to make that change.
So what I'm hearing is find somebody who is either better at you than what you do, or knows something about a topic that you effectively know next to nothing about, which that's how we grow. If we're just chatting with people who will cheer us on no matter what, who are we really helping, or are we hurting ourselves? No, that's really, really good. When you were talking about learning to be a CEO from your previous mentor, just in your opinion, do you think that these entrepreneurial traits, like being dependable, creative, being able to pivot, being coachable, do you think that anybody who wants to be an entrepreneur can learn these? Or do you think that there is... it's in our DNA, you know, if you have the entrepreneurial DNA, you're far more likely to succeed than somebody who might not be as entrepreneurial, but is willing to learn.
I think there's always two sides to every coin. And I think in the case of an entrepreneur, you've got the entrepreneur that started off as a kid being an entrepreneur, put together their own newspaper stand, or their selling orange juice, or they dug up worms and sold them, or whatever they chose to do. They found ways to make money as kids. So I think that that's that journey as an entrepreneur that's already built into. In the case of the interview with David Evans, he, 9-year-old, was coding, started coding and built his first company at 19, started coding at 14. So there's always that entrepreneurial journey that you're already part of. And then you've got the structured side where it's somebody that has a good idea, great understanding, but they're very structured and processed. So they're risk adverse and they put together a way that they want to generate a value, generate a business and start to build on it. And, you know, maybe they work at home and they have a full-time job, but they're building this on the side. So they're very methodical in how they're doing it. I don't think there's any proper way to say that this is the best one to invest in versus the other. I think they both have a lot of great value that they bring into the ecosystem. What makes a better entrepreneur versus one or the other is going to have a better success. I would love to say, because I love data, I haven't actually gone through to figure out, okay, which ones were founders in bucket A versus bucket B. But I can say that I do have companies that we've invested in that fall into bucket A that have been lifetime entrepreneurs since kids, and they're doing very well. And then we have people that are very structured, and they have maybe not were so much entrepreneurs as kids, but certainly very structured from a financial background and came in and are crushing it and building a company because they're very methodical and understanding of all these different moving parts. So I think when you're putting together how you become an entrepreneur, I think you do have to test it. Are you willing to put in the extra work? Are you okay with 20-hour days, 7 days a week? Are you okay to re-energize yourself by just walking around the block? Is that good enough for you as an entrepreneur to clear your mind and move on to the next challenge? I think that it's not made for everyone. And I think you have to always look at everything as something worth trying. And if I can't get the best results and feel the best out of what I'm doing, then maybe it's okay to accept that it didn't work and go to what does work for me. Because everybody does have a different inflection point of what's best and what's not. And you can't force something to be or force yourself to be an entrepreneur because it's the coolest thing to do. You really want to make sure that you're finding a spot where you can wake up every morning hungry, driven, and passionate to keep solving these problems and building your team and growing your business. And that doesn't always come if you've got to manage all the other stresses in life. So I think it's a hard question to answer, but I do think that you'll find it in yourself if you are a real entrepreneur material. And if you're not, that's okay too. You can be an entrepreneur supporter and you can invest or you can help support them by getting them into your company and selling their products through. So there's so many ways to support being an entrepreneur or working with entrepreneurs and having that entrepreneurial spirit. And it still makes you damn significant and awesome in this world of early stage companies.
So that should be really encouraging for anybody listening that might be aspiring to be an entrepreneur, that, you know, even if you weren't growing up with the newspaper route or the lemonade stand, not all is lost. It just takes the grind, the grit, if you will, to be ready for building something quite literally from the ground up. But again, it's refreshing to know that there isn't one personality trait that will get you there. And in fact, like you're mentioning, if you can find a partner or a mentor who is better than you at what you're doing, and they've been doing that for a long time, you've just made your life a whole lot easier. So JP, you've given a ton of information again on round number 2, just like you did in episode 1, which I really, really appreciate. Second last question I have for you, and you were semi-alluding to it before, was often the biggest hurdle when starting a company is funding, if you're looking for the funding. If you want to bootstrap, that's a different story, but we'll save that for another day. But when somebody is struggling to look for funding, what would be some pearls of wisdom that you can offer to a company, to an entrepreneur that is looking to raise any type of funds, whether it's a safe, whether it's proper equity, whether it's a debt instrument? What can you offer?
I think the easiest way for any founder to go about raising funds, especially early on, you're always going to look at friends and family as an option. They're heavily wanting to support you, and every dollar is going to help, especially when it's early on. In the ideal world, the best way is that you're working a job, you have some finances, you keep some of those finances back and save the dollars, and then you use those dollars to start to build out a prototype. You tie in a few people where you can. You maybe provide them with some little minor equity, very, very, very minor equity, because equity is like gold. So you can provide a few shares early on into the company, but really focus on What am I trying to execute? It's very detail oriented at this stage. You're trying to minimize your cost, your burn rate, and throwing money away. So really try to focus on that. I think a lot of the time we all want to be a big company because we spend all of our time in big companies and we think that we need all these people in order to operate. You got to really pull that back and just get to the bare bones minimum to get a viable product out to test your hypothesis. And do this for the cheapest amount of money. I know everybody wants to run quick and then raise funds as fast as they can, but why not just try to build a company without having to raise funds or generate some revenue and utilize some of that revenue to pay the cost of what you're trying to achieve? So there are ways to do this that make it a little bit more proficient. And then there's, of course, ways that you start to build and you find that it's taking you longer and the team is growing more because the product's heavier, and then you're going to have to start to raise funds. So when you get to that stage, there are non-dilutive options, government grants, shred credits. There are a lot of Canadian, U.S. and global opportunities where founders can go for non-dilutive funding. There are women in tech funds. There are BIPOC. There's a lot of different groups that are supporting different groups in the early stage space, which is amazing. So those have all come up in recent years. Again, going back to the government grant side. So those are the ways to kind of start. There are prototyping, there are accelerators and incubators that offer $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 to come in and work. There are countries that offer it. Chile startup community offers $60,000 to come into your company to help you grow. You have to spend 8 months there, I believe it is. There's other communities around the world that do the exact same thing and doing more of it because they want to bring entrepreneurs into their country. So you have to look at where the dollars are and where can you fit in accelerators and incubators to get the learning, but also build the business acumen that you're going to gain from these accelerators and incubators and networking opportunities and getting out and meeting people. There are all other ways to get a little bit of dollars to help support your company. And then the other side of it is you can start to look at friends and family, angel rounds, angel investments to help you get from that pre-seed to seed round funding. And those are because you're proving each stage as you go. And as you prove, more people want to throw money in. And as you continue to get and build that up, those are the areas that people are interested in, is showing that you have KPIs that you're hitting. Always prove that you're hitting KPIs. And if those KPIs have a lot of value, then people start to throw a lot of different types of check sizes into your business because they're seeing that growth. It's pretty typical today that most companies will raise just on safes. They'll start off their first round, probably their second seed round, maybe do a seed plus, and then they'll convert everybody at a Series A into an equity round. Most common, and the reason being is that you're trying to save money. So why spend all of this money converting everybody into convertible notes or into equity rounds at a seed stage or earlier? You might as well just write up a simple safe, put a cap on it, and then raise the funds against that. And then when you get to a further larger investment round, that's usually where you'll end up seeing everybody getting converted. It could be on a $3 million cash raise that you're doing. So maybe that's the conversion, and that's going to be up to the venture firm or the group that's investing in you. But there's lots of different options that you can also go on to FrontFunder and these other types of products that are set up to bring in other capital to match up to other equity investment dollars. So look out for all of them. But your goal really at the end of the day is try to build the most proficient company that's not burning a ton of cash, that's allowing you to have breathing room, reduce your stress. And then as you start to build on those KPIs and see that you're getting wins, that's where you're going to start to bring in the scaling dollars that are going to help you move that company to bigger, better spots.
So not that it's not, raising money is one of the hardest pieces of being an entrepreneur next to actually building your company. But like you were alluding to, there is no shortage of resources rather, and grants, friends and family. There are a ton of different places you can look to. So just because you might strike out in one area, or one area isn't necessarily allocating funds at that moment, there are plenty of other places, it seems, that you can turn to.
There certainly are a few, and again, they're not going to be the easiest, and you hit the nail on the hammer on the head, or whatever the saying is, but you're going to come across these that raising funds is very difficult. But if you can keep finding ways to de-risk your business, people will find ways to invest. So really take a look at how your business is being operated and ensuring that it's lean, that it's focused, that it's hitting the right problem, and that you're building sales channels and sales funnels. That's really, really important. Building an amazing company is great, but if you have no sales, it's useless. So you really need to make sure you've got market fit and that you don't have to build NASA. You need to build a prototype and you need to get it in front of people to start buying and utilizing. So once you start to hit those little metrics and you need to go and raise funds to offset your revenue model and supporting your team, then there are non-dilutive options as discussed, and there are also equity and other forms of capital that you can bring in to support what you're trying to achieve.
That is all really, really good info, JP. Thank you for that. The last question I'll have for you is very similar to the last question I had on the first episode, is from the entrepreneurial side, what would be, now we've gone, I mean, this entire episode is a pearl of wisdom, but if you had to sum it up to one pearl of wisdom that you'd have for an entrepreneur that, you know, is maybe wanting to start their own business versus sticking to the corporate side, which nothing wrong with that, I'm on that side. What would you suggest to them? What would be the one takeaway if this entire episode got deleted and this is the only answer or the only bit of info you could give out? What would that be? Loaded, I know.
Personally, I want to invest in people that are rock stars in their space, that they have a fifth gear. They're like a Michael Jordan where they can just turn it on and go, and they just hit a level that nobody else can hit. So in saying that, that all comes from being focused, finding the problem that you're trying to solve, and be the best damn solving person business at that problem. If you want the rest of the world to fall in line with what you're doing, be the best damn problem solver of that problem, and you're going to win. That's what it's about, because you're going to see the market, you're going to see what needs to change, you're going to pivot and change as fast as you need to, because you're the Michael Jordan of that space. The Kobe Bryant of that space. You are going to crush it because you're so damn focused on figuring out how to make this work. If you want to be successful in anything you do, you need focus and you need the ability to understand the space around you. And that comes again from focus. So be the best damn person and business at whatever it is you're trying to do, and you'll find success.
I love that point. It's a lot of people think of first mover advantages, which there are. There are first mover advantages. But it doesn't matter if you're coming into a well-established space already. People gravitate towards what's the best, not what's the first. I mean, look at Kodak cameras. I don't know why that was the first example I thought of, but where are they now? I mean, all of our phones have cameras. Be the best at what you do. Don't worry if you're not creating a whole new space, because, I mean, maybe that space that you're thinking of might not be useful, but if you could find what you're good at, what you can be the best at, the Michael Jordan, as you said, then you're going to find success. That's a really, really great point, JP. Again, thank you so much for doing the two-parter with me. I really appreciate it. And I will put your information in the show notes. I'll put your LinkedIn. I'll put the link to OPN, the Supporters Fund, and the OPN Ask an Angel podcast. Listen to quite a few episodes of those. Love how you do it. And anybody that's listening to this, go listen to JP and his, I believe you're over 100 episodes now on the Ask an Angel, aren't you?
We are. We're sitting at about, I think now publicly we have 100 and 125 we have posted, but we have done over 135 interviews to date.
All right. So listen to JP over at Ask an Angel if you really enjoyed this, because I know I did. JP, again, thank you so, so much for your time. I really, really appreciate all the info today.
You bet. Brendan, it was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for all the great questions. You're doing a phenomenal job. Keep it up. And I love the fact the way you're diving into all these different investors and investment vehicles and sharing to the community on how they can better improve what they're doing from assets to allocations to PE. So keep up the great work. Education is the best and you're doing a phenomenal job at it. So thanks for having me.
Never stop learning. That's what I always say. If you stop learning, you're dying.
I love it.
Thanks, JP.
You bet.